Hello and welcome to The Undermind, a podcast about brute war AI development. My name is Shonko, your host from MakingComputerDoThings.com. Let us begin. Hello and welcome. My guests today are Antigo, our returning guests and our dear leader in the Discord. Hello.
Good morning.
Zerg authors, Micro, the author of How Surprising Microwave.
Hello, everyone. It's not morning here, but afternoon.
Yeah, we are Allure and the World, and Marianne Deveca, the author of Killerbot. Hi.
Hi, everyone.
So, welcome to our 9th episode. Oh, it's so much, many episodes, such success, wow. So, as usual, I'd like to start with the introductions. Let's start with Marianne. Can you tell us about what, how, why, how did you get into this scene? Did you play StarCraft competitively on anything? And please share your life story with us.
Yes, so my name is Marian and I'm the author of Killerbot. I used to play StarCraft extensively and competitively during my university times. I used to play on WG Tour, PG Tour, and later PG Tour became IC Cup. I was also part of some local clans, both in Slovakia and Czechoslovakia. And yeah, I was around C-level IC Cup, mostly Protoss player, but I did not play PvP, so I played ZvP instead. I didn't like PvP. I was kind of, my thing was I was slow. I was only 150 APN maximum, so yeah, that was my limit. And after like 2010, I stopped playing StarCraft altogether, but due to some accident, I found out in 2012 that there was a competition for StarCraft bots led by Michael Chartitsky. I knew Michael Chartitsky before from university, but I was not aware of this tournament, but I was happy to find it. I watched some bots playing, and I thought the level was kind of average, that I maybe could do better and maybe even win this competition. Of course, what knows wasn't that easy, but I managed to win the competition in 2015 after some major updates to my bot.
Oh, that's great to hear. And what was that accident you mentioned? Or is it nothing interesting?
No, I mean, like, I was just scrolling through web and I was searching for something random, and I by accident found about this tournament. So nothing interesting.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you about your academic background, but you kind of revealed that. Is your major or the thing you study is related to AI?
No, I was a computer science major, but I did not study primarily AI. I had some courses for neural networks and expert systems and things like that, but I was actually more focused on compilers and algorithms, things like that.
I find that a good background in algorithms and data structures are very helpful during bot development. Would you agree with that statement?
Yeah, exactly. That is really important to understand that because, for example, for the bot, you have 50 milliseconds to perform a lot of things, and these things really help you.
And what language do you use to code your bot? Is it based on any other bot?
No, it's written from scratch. I actually rewrote it like two times. At first, I started in 2012, and after a month or two, I rewrote it again from scratch. But then in 2015, I had some major updates once again. I'm pretty happy with how my bot is structured. The code is pretty good, but there can be some improvements, yeah, still.
I would say it performs very well. And I remember we actually discussed that in the podcast that your bot wasn't updated for years and still performed quite well. I would say defeating Killerbot was a benchmark for some So congratulations for that.
Yeah, thank you. I tried to build something robust, and basically before this year's update, there were only slight updates, and the last major update was in 2015.
So I think you haven't answered what language do you code in?
Yeah, sure. So I use C++. I also had some professional C++ experience, although I mostly use other languages in my professional life now.
And with that, I would like to direct the same question to Micro as well. Please tell us about your background.
Yeah, my name is Miki Holtoff, and I'm from Denmark. And 20 years ago, I studied at the Technical University of Denmark, where I was studying for electrical engineering. And at that time, I was really interested in playing strategy games. I didn't play in any high level or pro levels. My APM at that time was about, at the same as it is now, around 20 or 30. So, and I played with some friends in our computer cafe. And I really loved the Muta unit. So that was my strategy, rush to Mutas and just make a lot of them. The other guys, my friends, really loved the carriers. So we just played multiplayer games, 2 against 2 or 3 against 3, against the inbuilt-in AIs. We never played against each other. So that's where my interest of StarCraft comes from. And if we forward to 2-3 years ago, I was I created an account on Twitch, and of course I wanted to watch some StarCraft on Twitch. So I searched for StarCraft and found the student tournament channel, and I watched that channel intensively for at least half year or 1 year. And I was chatting with the other guys in the chat, and then I got interested in starting up my own StarCraft AI. And at the same time, I found Jay's blog about AI programming, and he was just starting. He was just starting up on his bot, Steamhammer, and I really followed his blog posts at that time, and I still do. So all this led to that I forked his bot and started my own. That's about 2 years now.
And you had some successes, I would say. I mean, you got featured quite often in Nepeta's cast, so I think at least you produced interesting games, if nothing else. But
he did really well in SSC AIT last year, so.
Yeah,
that's right. I was really surprised that he got a 5th place in the IDE tournament last year. That was in 2017.
For those who do not know, Jay's blog is www.satirist.org. I think that's TWs. Okay, you can figure it out. I think you are smart enough. And Micro, what's your academic background? Does it have to do anything with StarCraft AI?
Not at all. Well, I worked some years as an electrical engineer, then I shifted to web development of web pages and database systems. And I've worked within that field for the last 8-9 years. So my field is not really programming. Well, it is programming, but it's for web development and databases. I don't have really that large experience in C++ programming, so it can sometimes be a hurdle to figure out how I do things.
Oh yeah. So also, you answered my question. I would have asked, what language did you choose for your blog? Any particular reasoning behind that, or just that seemed to be the best fit?
it is a fork of Steamhammer, and he's using C++, so that's the reason.
Speaking of professional StarCraft experiences, Antigua, you mentioned that you will play BSL this year.
Yeah, I've actually got a lot of stuff going on. So ended up, I actually didn't qualify in the top 100 for BSL, which is sort of a foreign StarCraft player tournament. I qualified like 120 something. But enough people dropped out or were banned for rules infractions that I got bumped up in the bracket. So I actually play here in about an hour and a half, my first rounds of the bracket. So it's sort of the top level foreigner tournament. So if you're a StarCraft player outside of Korea, it's everybody who's anybody is there playing. So it's been pretty fun. I've got to play some games versus Neokin and quite a few other sort of, and DeWalt and quite a few other top level people as part of the latter stages at this point. On the academic side of things, I'm actually finishing up my master's thesis, and it is due on the 13th of February. And I'm involved in a trio of research papers that are pretty cool. And those will come out within the next 6 months to 2 years. Most of my research focused is on continuity of AI research projects. So if you're doing large AI research projects and you have team members coming out, or, you know, heaven forbid somebody in the team passes away, something like that. Also on digital afterlife or online accounts. So if, you know, if you're Facebook and you have people who are passing away, what do you do with their accounts and information? And then there's also sort of a sub-focus there on some AI research aspects as well. So a bunch of stuff that I'm working on at this point. I'm pretty excited both on the academic and professional side. I can't wait to graduate in April with a master's degree. It's been a long time coming, so.
We wish you the best of luck. And also qualifying for BSL, that's quite a feat. So anyone taking up the pizza challenge will have to do very good.
Well, yeah, I've actually been practicing a lot for BSL and other tournaments, so I'm quite a bit better than I was a few months ago. So if you want to take up the pizza challenge and sort of play a decent player with your bot to see how you stand, my MMR is somewhere probably between 1900 and 2000. Which puts me probably, I don't know, top 5,000 worldwide or something like that. So I'm not awesome, but I'm decent enough.
Oh, come on, don't short sell yourself. Believe.
Well, as part of BSL practice and stuff, I've had to play a lot of high level players. And when I practice against people and I lose 20-0, it sort of shows the player skill difference. So while I'm decent, I'm no semi pro.
I'm a very bad motivational speaker, actually, maybe the sarcastic tone of my voice, but yeah, we believe in you. So, okay, next question is something we discussed briefly before, but since we have two Zerg authors here, do you feel that coding for Zerg is harder or much different than the other races? Let's start with Marianne.
Okay, so I can comment for this a little bit. I have thought about this quite for some time, even after the last cast. Yeah, of course, there is this drone army balance problem, which we all are aware of. Also, Zerg units are very fragile, and that leads to situation when if you make one wrong move and move through into or through a Terran army, then you will lose basically half of your army, whereas a Protoss army is more likely to survive these kind of things. But I actually thought of one additional thing, and that is that Zerg is at its core a reactionary race, meaning that, for example, as a Terran, if you decide to go mech or a BO versus Zerg, I can't basically change your mind as a Zerg. No, you can't go BOR, no, you can't go mech. You can do what you want. And the same goes for Protoss. Protoss can open two gate or one gate or go fast expansion, can go Ser Reaver or just Zealot Archon, whatever. I, as a Zerg, don't have as much impact on that. But if I, as a Zerg, react wrongly to this opening, for example, I go Mass Hydra when the Terran goes full bio, then I'm basically dead. So basically, you have to react perfectly as a Zerg compared to the other races who dictate the pace, basically.
So far less margin for error, you would say.
Also that, yeah, but basically you can't just have a fixed build order and follow it, because if the Terran does something different than you expect it, you will basically die.
I can see that.
I think there's some aspects to that that play in with availability of scouting information. In order to react, you have to have data, and how the quality of your scouting makes a big difference there. And it's not always available too, which makes it even more difficult. You know, some maps have good overlord sort of scouting paths and things, and others tend to not. And some of the better Terran bots and human players as well can deny scouting. It makes reacting appropriately complicated.
Yeah, I feel that the Terrans and Protoss, that can just make army and just move out, whereas Zergs, we really need to scout, and that's the difficult part, to make to do the right scouting, and then of course reacting on the scouting, and that's what has been missing a lot for a lot of Zergs. We don't position our overlords correctly, and we don't use our units at all for scouting. We just, yeah, we either just sit back or move forward towards the opponent.
Yeah, overlords themselves are kind of their own specialized subtopic, how to use them early. And there's quite a bit of complexity there that isn't immediately obvious.
Yeah, no, Eric, the author of Eric Hammer, did a lot of overlords scouting, and it's quite interesting to see his code if you read it.
Yeah, I often see that the player has 10 million Zerglings sitting around, and Zerglings are dirt cheap. You can spare 10 for scouting if you want, and instead of that, all the links just go into one place. I think that's that could be an easy improvement.
I've just been thinking about to use Burrow links just around the maps, just like that the Terran uses mines for map control or scouting or information gathering.
And the link is not much expensive than a mine, to be honest.
Yeah, it's something that can work, but you know, it's a lot of gas, kind of a lot of gas to spend early. It's something that is better sort of considered mid-late.
Yeah, I was thinking that, of course, it's an expense in the early, and only if the game tends to go longer and you have the economic effort, you could do that.
Something else is that people tend to think that Zerglings are cheap, and I actually tend to sort of disagree. Zerglings may be the most expensive unit that you buy, which sounds weird and kind of requires a little bit of explanation. So really, when you think about Zerg, you're actually larva limited. So you have X amount of larva that comes out of so many hatcheries. If you want more larva, that requires more hatcheries, which is sort of an expensive cost, which is often not factored into Zergling production costs. And one of the interesting aspects of that is that, you know, especially if you're doing a gas heavy build, for instance, you know, three bases, three gas, for example, building Zerglings ends up being highly inefficient compared to drones, overlords, and like lurkers or mutas, for example. And there's actually some Zerg builds that purposely extremely limit the number of Zerglings in favor of high tech, high expansion. And so it's more of a flavor thing, and it needs to be considered quite carefully. I tend to think as the level of play goes up, you actually see Zergling conservation being quite important, and that it's calculated fairly carefully.
Yeah, every time you build a pair of circlings, you could have built a drone. So you need to decide, should I build a drone or build a circling?
And there's the other part of that calculation is, what is the most effective combat unit per larva, right? You could build a pair of zerglings, or you could build an Arcturus, right, which is much more efficient use. Or you build a muta that turns into a guardian, right? So you can use less hatcheries to make more effective combat units if you go higher on the tech thing. And that's sort of a differentiation between tech-based zerg builds and more like a Sauron-style zerg, which is mass upgrades, low cost units into, you know, that Sauron style, and then you have your more tech based builds that are sort of lower hatchery counts and more gas based and higher unit complexity, which are more larva efficient.
Yeah, this can exactly make a difference early game. If the Protoss opens, let's say, 2 gate, then you will need quite a lot of zerglings. But if the Protoss opens 1 gate, you will only need a few. And if it goes fast expansion, then you will maybe need only 2 for scouting, maybe more later. But this can make a big impact if you make zerglings instead of drones, or vice versa.
And there's also a follow-up aspect to this that, so for instance, on ladder, I often open overpool at Zerg versus Protoss, and I build the initial 6 lanes, right? And then I do something that bots really don't do. I don't spend the larva, right? And until I have scouting information, right? And, you know, if I decide that I need more zerglings, I'll build more zerglings. But if I see that they've fast expanded, I will build drones with that extra set. So I'll conserve them until I have sufficient scouting information in order to do an action, which is, I think, something that bots sort of struggle with. They're not as able to do things like that, especially early. And the difference between 6 zerglings or 3 drones in the early game is, it's massive, actually. It's, you know, it's a third more income almost, a quarter. It's a lot.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
Yeah, I agree, and that's... So we should actually, Circus could actually decide, should we build a drone, build a circlings or another unit, or actually don't build anything at all. I haven't considered that last third option at all.
Yeah, and it's a difficult one. You know, bots don't often think in terms of, what if the best option is to build nothing? And that doesn't really go into most bot models.
The only winning move is to not play.
Yeah, until you know what to do, you know, especially with that first decision of, do you make more zerglings or do you make drones? And really delaying the zerglings isn't that big of a deal, because, you know, if you need them to deflect a rush, or they only built 1 cannon in their fast expansion and you build more, you know, to try and break it, things like that you can take advantage of. But until you know, you'll see this at higher levels of ZVP, that they let the larva sit until they know.
I would say you at least should make at least 1 pair of circlings, or maybe 2 pairs, just to use them for scouting and for just poking into the opponent's space if they are fast expansion.
Yeah, with 9 pool or overpool, I always make the initial 6, just because the advantages of catching a Protoss that has fast expanded improperly, or is doing a really hard 2-gate play, you need them. But those next 3 larvae are the ones that I use very carefully based on information.
Yeah, basically you should not be larva blocked for a long time, but except that you should plan your drones or zerglings early in the game very carefully.
Yeah, and that also brings up another really interesting target, which is larva waste. So I don't know how many bots, if any, I'm not sure on this, allocate units that are purchased to hatcheries in such a way to not waste larva, or calculate which units to build based on distance to where they're needed at the right hatchery, things like that. I'm not sure that there's been enough work into having intelligent production of where the units are made and to not waste your larvae. So if you have, you know, three hatcheries and one's about to hit three max larvae and then waste the fourth that won't spawn because you already have three, you build off that one, right? Rather than one that has two larvae, right? So you efficiently use the sets.
So for my boat, I actually do this. I try to calculate where there is the most larva, and the larva or the larva timer is highest. But apart from this, I also consider if expansion is under threat, and then it tries to build somewhere else. But this can also backfire in early rush situation where you need all the larva and all the units you can get.
That's awesome. I didn't realize anyone had a smart allocation system for that sort of stuff.
I have to look at your code.
Oh, me too.
Actually, can I? Is it open source?
No, my bot is not open sourced. We can have a talk about it. What are the pros and cons of open source? Like, for example, obvious pros would be that Steamhammer family, like or UAlberta, derived bots, which there's plenty of them, they are solid and you can easily build upon them. There's things like Locutus, where you know what happened last year, where some cheap clones tried to steal the attention. But
if I were a mainstream journalist, I would just say, let's not forget the Forcutus fiasco of last year.
Yeah, but from my perspective, there is also thing like sometimes if you approach a problem from a different angle, you can get a new perspective on that problem. So it's not always about reinventing the wheel is the wrong approach. You can do something better than what the others are doing. Maybe something will not be as good, but it depends on how much time will you invest to it. If you invest 3 months to it and you did not learn anything through that process and the solution before is still better, then I don't think it was worth it. But if you have learned something new through that process or so basically what is worth for you, it should be a fun experience for you, for the bot developer, and you should stick to that.
Yeah, if I know that as a bot that does something and I would like to do something similar, I read the code, and sometimes you can't just copy the code, so I just take the idea and implement it in my own way. Sometimes I actually just use the code if it's really good, like much of the code from Arrowcammer has gone into my bot right now.
I'm all about reinventing a wheel, to be honest. First of all, because this is a very new field and a unique one at that. It's a very specific subfield of AI, what we are doing. And also, in AI in general, there are a lot of new improvements. Like when I read up on jump point search, that algorithm was invented in 2011, I think. Yeah, it's just 8 years old. And A-star, the best algorithm before that, I'm sure I'm wrong about it, but let's go with it, was like from the 70s or 80s. So yeah, always go for it. Or there is the anecdote I remember when a math professor just gave an unsolved math problem as an exam question, just for fun, and students just solved it and proved a mathematical problem. So it's always possible that you will reinvent the wheel. Go for it.
I think there's some aspect of it that's really cool, and you know, when you have multiple bots that sort of do the same thing, sort of a smart author will often read several different examples of it and use them as like different arguments for different ideas, and then make a better synthesis of those ideas in the next generation. So I think that ideas in some way are additive and build on each other. And the benefit of experience of being able to look at older bots and the mistakes that they've made in specific areas is very helpful to development.
And also both developers came from very different backgrounds, and you bring your background with you and borrow ideas from that. And this cross-pollination of ideas is just the breeding ground of new and unique algorithms. I'm so proud of this sentence.
That's pretty awesome. You know, I have noticed that there are some really different approaches depending on the background that people come from. You know, engineers especially come at things from a sort of specific angle, and that can be quite different from, for instance, a computer science background. And it's quite enjoyable to see the differences and the difference in approaches.
Yeah, for example, my dark secret is that I'm an enterprise Java developer, and it fucking shows on my code, but hey, it works. Yeah, so to go back to an earlier point, I thought about that, and that's a very, very good point you brought up, Antiga, and Marianne's too, where to produce units, because most bots just plop down a few factories or barracks or whatever and keep producing from them until the end of the game. And it would be so easy to just float the barracks closer when you're already on full supply or things like that, or just produce from the closest one, or build one in closer to the enemy, because at the mid game or late game you kind of have the resources to do that.
And it by far affects Zerg the most, because they can build anything from anywhere. So, you know, if you're having a battle, you want to build the combat units close to the battle, not the drones you need in your main base at the battle, right, at your natural, right? You know, that's sort of obvious, but I think a lot of bots don't take that into account.
So when I was thinking about this, it was usually when I expand to some distant expansion, and I'm afraid that some vultures will come and kill my newly built drones. So the optimal way would be first spawn, for example, one Hydralisk, then to spawn one drone and build a sunken colony, and then start building drones, something like that. But I have not implemented in this sophisticated manner yet.
Do you implement any kind of strategic use of the creep, right? Like purposefully creeping up some territory? Or do you plan to do that?
No, I just have some algorithm on sunken placement. It's working kind of good at the moment. But also, in some situations, the sunken placement is better, for example, to be behind your buildings, and in some situation your sunken placement is better in front of your buildings. Like, for example, versus range units, versus marines and dragons, you want to have your sunkens at front. But versus zealots and archons, you want to have your base impassable in multiple ways and sunken somewhere behind or in the middle of your sim city.
Another Zerg related question to the bot authors. Do you use defilers? Why do you think there is no serious defiler usage in bot games? Or defiler is an underrepresented unit, it seems.
That's true. I don't do defilers at the moment, but well, of course, I have that plan for a long time. Jay just added that last year to Steamhammer, and if you see some of his games, it's the defiler uses is quite a bit difficult. It's a slow unit, and you really need to figure out where to put the to use
Swan?
It. Yeah, exactly. To use it. But it is actually one of the core units for Zerg to go to for, especially for, in both against the Protoss and Terrans. It is really, I don't know why it's not being used anymore than it is.
Yeah, I, same as Micro, I wanted to implement it few times already, but there is always something else that comes into my attention, and even at this moment I'm more likely going to focus on some basics and not on defilers, although it is really a cool unit and important unit in all matchups except ZVZ maybe, maybe we don't use it because it's hard to, it needs to interact with other army in a specific way, or alone on its own it's very fragile, it can be easily picked off, so it always needs to have something to protect it, and swarm needs to be placed in alignment to your ground army movement. So yeah, maybe it's just difficult at this moment.
Yeah, that's true. It's it's the interaction with the other parts of the army that is difficult. Sometimes you need to cast on your own units, or sometimes on the opponent's units, depending on what you want to do.
It's also a hard payoff on time, I think, because, you know, 90% of the games end before 15 minutes, really, you know, and all of the late game units, you know, you can spend a lot of time working on them, but, you know, in reality, rarely do they get played. Even though in the case of the Defiler, if you generally in CVP and CVT especially, if you are in decent shape versus your opponent, at least in human games, and you get to Defilers, generally your expected win rate rises quite substantially, especially in ZVT. It's getting there is somewhat complicated.
Ovise then once said, life is short and code is long. So yeah, and you need to prioritize. And that's what I see also, that most of the Zerg simply does not get to Hive Tech. Game is usually over. And circling back to an earlier point, in human games, what I see is mid-game for the Zerg is just about somehow surviving. Correct me if I'm wrong, Antiga, because you have far more experience with this, but mid-game is basically the worst for Zerg.
It can be. It really depends on how you intend to play. You know, human Zergs often know that their end game, their chances of winning go up, so they try and get there quite quickly. And because of that, they make sacrifices in the mid game and often play quite short on units in the mid game on purpose, trading mid game power for late game power. And because of that, there's an attitude that you need to survive. That said, there are older techniques to play a strong mid-game as Zerg versus Terran. One of the oldest is actually to do plus one weapons for lurkers, so that when Terran gets plus one armor, your lurkers still kill the Marines in two hits instead of three, which is a massive boost to mid-game performance and allows you to stay on lurkers and play a longer mid-game. And there are several other techniques of that, but that is one example.
Well, Microwave is going to Hive Tech, but it's only using some of the, well, actually only one of the units, the Ultralisk, of course, yeah. Because it's much easier to use. It's basically just a big circling, so you will just rush forward and kill anything. And also Steamham also did that recently until it got the uses of Defilers and Guardians too.
Yeah, Guardian is another hard to utilize unit, but it can pay off big time.
In general, in today's play, Guardian is very rarely seen. I actually remember times when it was used in ZVP. Also, I think we discussed this with Antiga, that Xavier used to use this, but it's quite a long time ago. And versus Terran, it's more of a surprise technique where you go very fast hive and then spawn few guardians above the Terran natural. And if the Terran does not have enough science vessels or wraiths, then it may be game over, but otherwise they just fall behind much.
Yeah, guardians can devastate work online very quickly.
We have seen it a couple of times in the latest ASL and KSL games, so it's not that rare.
Okay, I'm a little bit behind of the current KSL. I need to watch the new things.
Yeah, we saw some savior style play that we talked about on the previous cast, where it's up to the, you know, the double natural four gas worker sunken spore turtle, and then the protoss decides, hey, in order to break static defenses, I need reavers, and then you put guardians over spore colonies and laugh at them while they try and break your bases. Is pretty much how that goes.
Yeah, it sounds like a very fun way to play it, and I don't know if any.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's a quite old style, but like most styles, what style is good, it kind of depends on what everyone else is doing, and that comes and goes. It's not a static thing.
Yeah, if the maps are more camp heavy, where you can take easily a different natural and protect it, then you can have a fourth main very easy, then this style is very rewarding.
But not all maps support it, and not all SSC AIT maps support it, so you know a bot that would be trying to do it has to take that into consideration.
The thing I think we all agree on is Zergling Micro is one of the most important thing you have to code as a Zerg. And I would like to ask the both authors again, how hard was it to code your Zergling Micro, or how much Zergling Micro do you have? Or do you agree with my statement at all?
I think Zergling Micro is very important, and at the moment I'm not so happy with it. I used to be happy with it, but now I think the general level of Micro has risen in the past few years, and I would like to make my Zergling Micro and Zergling Group Micro better for things like surrounds and catching up ropes, which my bot does not do very well.
Yeah, Zergling Micro is definitely one of the most important things to do, but actually I haven't spent much time on it because I think I had so much other important stuff to do first to actually make it survive.
And we came back to the ever-present question of prioritization.
Yeah, actually, I don't have specific micro for many units. It's generic for all units except for Mutalisk, Queen, and Overlord and Drone. Everything else has like the same brain of a sort, so there is no special micro in my boat for let's say Zergling Hydralisk. Also Lurker has a special micro, yeah, but the Zergling and Hydralisk use the same brain.
Yeah, I have a different micro for melee units, and then I have a different one for ranged units, and then the range is then also divided into mutas, which is a bit different because they are air units. And then there's a special micro for lurkers. So there's special classes for each different unit type, but I don't have any special micro for circling specifically.
And would you agree that the drone is the dumbest fucking unit ever?
No, I think it's the best one, best unit. If you could use drones only, I would do that. They are good for blocking, like Terran CSVs, and they can turn into anything the Zerg wants to do.
Well, I disagree, so thanks for being on the podcast. And, no, I
they are really
drones.
Beautiful. Drones are beautiful. They can mine, they can build things. I actually thought when I was younger, I did not focus on the unit details, but I thought that they are not picking the minerals by their hands, but that is their mouth, their jaws that they are eating from the mineral.
Because yeah. They are stupid shrimps.
If you group them with an overlord, you can get drones to do silly things, you know, chase while attacking, destroy stuff. But bots can do that just sort of by spam clipping, and they're ranged too, which is awesome. So you can do some really crazy abuse of SCVs and other stuff. They're better than people think.
While we are at the goofing off point, did you do any kind of meme builds or just stupid shit because you felt like it in your bots?
No, that's the short answer. I just do standard builds. Those that you can find on Leakopedia and fit them into the how the bots play.
Yeah, at some point, I don't know, it was maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I tried to do some micro in a way that zerglings would form some shape, so that I, for example, could form a heart or some letters on the minimap, but I never finished that. But there was some effort spent.
Of course, it's fun to do stuff like that, but you have to prioritize when you don't. I have full-time work, so I don't have that much time to spend on programming.
Yeah, it's a tricky thing to balance. And by the way, do you look at other people's code? Obviously, you looked micro at Steamhammer's code, but do you just browse some other bots' code and try to get inspiration from it?
Yeah, Eric Hammer, as I mentioned before, but also every other top Zerg in the latest tournament I have looked at is good to. If I wanted to know if they had something special strategy I could get inspired by, or micro, or special features like using special new units like Guardians or Defilers or something.
Yeah, I don't actually do that very often, only if somebody passed something to a Discord channel, I might look and edit, but purposefully I usually don't do that.
Yeah, that seems to be the practice, that when you are trying to solve a specific problem, then you look at those code snippets. But often, not often, sometimes I just browse some people's code. Because why not?
Yeah, sure, it can be cool to see also the architecture and stuff. Yeah, before, I think, 2012, there were some general libraries that have some structure of that basically divided the code to managers. And this is like maybe the only inspiration for my bot was this, that I divided the structure for my bot to managers, and every manager has its own things to look at. Yeah,
I think that's a conclusion that many people arrived at independently, because I do that too.
Do you have an overseer manager that manages all the little, you know, sort of submodule managers, or no, they're just managers for their individual parts?
Regional manager.
So for my bot, no. Every manager can ask any other manager for information or do him some kind of favor. So they have like that.
Can you tell me about any challenge you encountered that was hard to overcome or hard to get right during development?
Zerglings placement, that was really hard, I think. I did different kind of programming codes for that. I would look at different bots, Eric Hammer and Steam Hammer and the other Zergs. But I think I finally got there. So that was, and also in general, just making the SimCity, the placement of the different buildings in the Zerg SimCity. Was a bit difficult, because you basically need to have the creep to build the building zone, and sometimes there's not enough space for it.
Well, for me, two challenges come to my mind. The first was to basically plan things to the future in a perfect manner, that your larvas won't be wasted, and then your timings will be right. So I spent a lot of time to this and developed some planner that basically can plan, 2,500 frames into the future, near perfect simulation style, and this has been working really great for me. Other thing would be the combat evaluation. I use something very simple, and I've been updating on top of that for last years, and I know of some situations where the army, when it's positioned in some special way, then it will surely behave really bad, and there is quite a few of these scenarios, so I will need to somehow address this, and I have some ideas how I could face this, but the algorithms will be much more complex, so I don't know about how I will deal with that in a 50 millisecond cap.
It's quite impressive.
Yeah, compared to the Shinsons, is very they're really difficult to spend a lot of time to figure out how I will use the output of FAP, the combat simulator from Noob by Edge. And also did a lot of work on the decide if I should make a drone or a combat unit. I tend to change that every time I work on the code.
And what do you find harder, like doing something within the set performance constraints, like the 50 millisecond you wanted, or doing something right, or these are interconnected?
I would say they are interconnected, but decision making in general is, I think, the hardest thing for a bot. Well, I think that some things are easier for bot, like macro or having the perfect mining, or always hitting the minerals to be low. These are things that are easier for bot to do, or also stutter step micro kiting. This is easier for bot to do than for a human, but there are some things that are much easier for humans to do than for a bot. Like, for example, we now see that Crazio P has this cannon rush, which is not really a high level cannon rush. It's kind of a stupid cannon rush, as it starts to build cannons way off your base and slowly comes towards you. So I don't think this will work twice in a row versus D player. But our bots, even Saida, loses to this like every time.
I think Saida is hard-coded, like it does not adapt to his opponent or its opponent to a large degree.
It has some small adaptations that are more sort of structural build order related, but it's all the same sort of start. Now, there's a lot of branches in that bot, though. It's a massive if statement. There's a ton of stuff in there.
Yeah, as we say, AI stands for accumulated if statements.
I was going to ask you, I know in SSC AIT, you got sort of the worst possible role for opponents for Killabot. That was really unlucky to get those two in a row. I was just going to ask you about that and what you thought of the games.
Yeah, before the SSCIT tournament in December, I was mainly focusing on build orders. I noticed that the Mutalisk don't work as well in the ZVP matchup because my opponents firstly start to build a lot of Corsairs. But that was kind of manageable before because I could hit before they have the critical number and reduce their numbers. But then I would also have to face Archons, and I could not get the micro right against Archons. There were just some situations where my Mutalisks were fly stupidly somewhere, and the Archon could get free hits on my super stacked Mutalisk, and I could not solve this. So I decided to switch to Hydra openings, which are much more standard, like 4 or 5 hedge Hydra Lisks. And I was able to do this in a way that it works versus many opponents, but some opponents have some timing rushes that exploit some of its weaknesses. And I should have also added some lurkers into the build. Because I did not add the lurkers, this is TCCMU build is very zealot archon based, which would lurkers be ideal against. Yeah,
I love there is no two person that says TCCMU's name the same way.
Yeah, do we know what it actually means, or is it just some random characters?
We have no idea.
I don't know. I say it as Shmoo, so I don't know if that's right either.
Maybe it's to confuse us. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, really.
And now he has Michael. Now he has a TSMU 2, so it's not that easy.
he's got several. So, and actually, I was really curious too. This is SSC AIT as well, but Microwave, how do you fancy your chances versus Crazio OP?
It could go either way. It was 1-1 in the round robbing, and I actually did quite good, I think, on Basil. But I guess it will be random. It could go either way. And that's the thing, this format doesn't really serve the best boss well, I think, because everybody has a weakness against one of the top 16, so if we really like Killerbots was really unlucky this time, and last year I was Microwave was really lucky to get some of the bots that he could beat, so he got really far. He went to the semifinals.
Yeah, same for myself. Last year I was super lucky. I almost won, so I don't think that was deserved, as I did not update my bot that year. But also to my ZVZ matchup, I think since last year, the ZVZ of many bots has gone much better. They play much standard builds, either play have better defense, or they go for very fast mutas. And for my unorthodox build, does not work versus that very, very good.
We saw some quite good games last week, round two.
Purple Wave versus Banana Brain, that last game was awesome. If you want a recommendation, that is probably the best one, in my opinion, that's been played so far, that series.
Me too. I think that it was just the best. The other games were interesting as well, don't get me wrong, but yeah. And then won that round. In addition to winning our hearts.
It was just really cool to watch. Very impressive series of games between the two of them, and very creative, really pushing PvP hard.
All the other matchups were 3-0, so they were good games, by the way. I'm not saying they weren't, but did not live up to that.
I actually thought that Killerbot was better against Eric Hammer, because I thought that Killerbot has a really good CVC strategy when he plays.
So actually on the ZVZ on the Basil ladder, I think it's my worst opponent is actually Eric Hammer. I have the worst score against him.
Just rough. Sorry that you're out. That's all right. They'll be next year and more tournaments coming up. Are you going to play in AIST?
Yeah, I've been thinking about it, but I have no time currently to do some adaptations to my bot, so likely maybe next time, yeah.
Okay. And for those that don't know, AIST registration is open through the 15th, and bots are due on the 28th of February.
Yeah, thanks for the public service announcement.
Oh, you're welcome. I got to advertise for my little tournament and all that. So.
Actually, wanted to ask you about AIST, so that was sincere from my part.
Yeah, I think it's a really cool tournament, and I'm looking forward to see how players will perform in this kind of setting.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's really cool initiative to make a tournament like this, playing on the lightest pro maps, and it really will heighten the quality of the bots, because they really need to overcome the these new maps that they are not used to play on.
Yeah, map analysis is sort of a whole sub area of AI bot development, and it's been sort of lackadaisical. And I hope that this and other tournaments sort of push those standards up over time.
That begs the question, what kind of map analyzer or tools do you use?
At the moment, I'm using a combination of BWEM and BWTA. The Steamhammer, when I forked it, was using BWTA. And but I'm moving towards to only using the community version of BWEM, because it is actually being worked on, and will be worked on if new maps, if it doesn't work on new maps. And then also it will be easier for me to upgrade the BWAIP version. Right now I'm 4.12, and it would be nice to upgrade that too.
Yeah, one of the reasons why I'm not joining this tournament is because my map analysis is really poor. I have something I've written in 2012 or something like that, and that only detects expansions and maybe can detect islands and if it's a natural or something like that. Very little stuff, and it is high on my priority list to do a better map analysis.
And any other third-party tools like combat simulators or anything else? You mentioned FAP before.
I'm also looking forward to Steamhammer's new custom map analyzer that Jay's working on, that he sounds like he's getting pretty close to having ready. We'll have to see what that looks like in comparison to the existing tools.
Yeah, I think this is kind of the area where I like to see reinventing the wheel, because here we can have many approaches, and we can solve different problems with a different approach.
Yeah, but I don't know why he's actually trying to do it all himself instead of actually using the libraries that we actually have in the community. Well, he is using FAP, so that's okay. But and many of the other bots are not doing reinventing the wheels like he's doing.
Yeah, it's a very big part, and you just simply don't want to spend so much time when you can use something that's already available. Not like with unit micros and everything, when you can just invent your own flavor and be slightly better at some subsection.
Yeah, and just a tip that BWEM community does not analyze the AIST maps perfectly either. So if you're planning on participating, you can use it stock and it will probably be close enough, but it doesn't do a perfect job. So you would have to do some modifications yourself, or it would need upgrades.
Well, that's why we have a community version of BWEM, I guess, that everybody can contribute to it.
Yep. And it gets better every time. I'm just noting that the current version is perhaps not quite good enough for the AIST map pool. But bots are not due till the 28th, so we've got some time here.
All right, I think we have to cut short this cast, because Antiga, you have a great match coming up.
Oh, yeah, I gotta go here pretty quick. So, but thank you for having me on. Really appreciate it, and good luck to everyone in AIST.
Do you want a really bad motivational speech before you go?
Not really. I'm trying to stay motivated, not demotivated.
Okay, I will take my skills elsewhere.
When can we watch you play?
I'm not sure if these are going to be live streamed. Under the rules of BSL, I am banned from discussing game results until they are either streamed or released by the league. So I don't know when that's going to be available. Because I can't release it because I would give spoilers, so I can't say anything.
So, Antiga, good luck to you and looking forward to the replays.
Thank you. Take care.
Good luck. And for the others, thank you very much for being on the cast.
Yeah, good luck and goodbye for now.
Thanks for having me.